Accession number 22342, reel 3.
Trooper Bowdler, reel 3. You were saying that you quite talked to the Indians when you arrived at Bombay.
Yes. But that was very temporary, I'm ashamed to say. From Bombay, we were sent out into the plains, a place called Galunchi Camp, which was a sort of, it was in the middle of what I can only describe as desert. It was all rocky and a rocky plain, sandy, rocky plain. No, very few trees, few little stunted bushes here and there. Terribly hot, terribly, terribly hot. And we were on a sort of raised piece of ground with a flat top. What do they call that?
Plateau.
Yes, we were on a plateau. Not terribly high, but nevertheless a plateau. I suppose they'd chosen that for in the monsoons the rain would fall off, run off, and in the hot weather you'd be slightly above the rest of the plain. But it was a dreadful place, it really was. We were in tents. The camp was made of tents.
What sort of tent?
Canvas.
But I mean, what size of tent was it?
Oh, sorry, there'd be, let me see. There'd be about 6 men in a tent, I suppose, yes.
Were these bell tents, or were they...?
No, they were square tents.
Square tents.
Square tents, and you'd have the sides out, you know, just the tent, let the air get through. Nothing on the floor, just the floor. You were issued a kit box, which was made of cedar wood, I believe, to protect you against the white ants, the termites, which were everywhere. And they kept your kit in good condition because, it was sealed. And that was it, really. A portion of this plateau was swept. Stones gathered up and used as a parade, and white paint put around it, stones with white paint on, and that was used as a parade ground, and it wasn't what we were used to. You couldn't make that thunderous crash onto this stuff. It didn't work at all.
What sort of troops were in the camp? Were they from Royal Armoured Corps? Or were they
I met some of my old troops there, the chaps I'd trained with, some of them, not an awful lot of them. And we had some regular army soldiers injected into the unit. We were called the 25th Dragoons at that time.
This is when you joined the 25th Dragoons?
That's when I was allocated to the 25th.
Yes, well, I mean, I was going to ask when you were told that you were going to become a 25th Dragoon.
On arriving at Galunchi Camp, this camp. Until then, we were just members of the Armoured Corps.
Yes. And you were a part of a reinforcement draft, presumably, going out.
Yes. Mm. They intended starting a new unit with us. And so there are two new units, in fact, 25th Dragoons and 26th Hussars.
Had you had any ideas previously about what regiment you'd like to join?
Not really, no, as long as it was a tank regiment, I wasn't all that bothered, In fact, this 25th Dragoons is not a regular unit at all. It was formed in South Africa, I believe, as a cavalry unit during the Boer War. And it was formed just for that, and then disbanded afterwards.
So it was revived.
So they revived it, yes. And we had an intake of regulars from other units, from other regular units.
You mentioned that you had some from the 3rd Carabiniers.
3rd Carabiniers, that's where the majority of our regulars came from. And that's where my opinions of the Indians was altered. Because these chaps came in and they had a sort of seniority over us, a superiority, because they'd been, some of them had been up to the northwest frontier and they'd done service there for a number of years. And they were not very kind to the Indians, I'm afraid. They didn't treat them at all well. And you can understand the Indians' attitude towards us, I suppose, when you saw what was going on. But you very quickly got influenced by these people. You thought, you know, that if they said it, they had longer service than you, therefore it must be true. But no, they didn't treat them at all well. And eventually you came to think in the same way that they did, probably not quite as extreme.
Were these men older than you, generally?
Yes, yes.
What sort of age range did they have?
Well, none of them were very old, of course, but I suppose, what were we? We were 20, yeah, we were 21, 20, 21, and they would be in their 30s, I suppose, something like
that. Well, it's 10 years difference,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of difference at that age.
Yeah, mm. Yeah. And so you were greatly influenced by these people, and it wasn't until afterwards that I learnt that the 3rd Carbineers saw the 25th Dragoons as a gift from heaven, because it enabled them to get rid of all their unpopular and less enthusiastic members of their regiment. Mm. And so we got the dregs, really. So what I saw was not really the true...
Wasn't the best of the Carbineers.
Wasn't the best of the 3rd Carbineers. Mm. So I can't be too critical of them. Mm. I never saw the best of them. I think they had a jolly good war record. Mm. I don't know, but I think they did. Anyway, the marvellous thing about this was that these blokes, these 3rd Carbineers, although they were regulars and all the rest of it, they had all this service in, never really got to fight, because they were repatriated just before we went into action.
Uh-huh.
So it became a different regiment then.
Mm.
We were a lot more skilled and experienced when we went into action. But I remember the conditions on Galunchy were terrible. You'd lay there on your bed, because you couldn't do anything in the daytime at the height of the sun. And a breeze would come through, and it was as if somebody had opened the door of an oven or a furnace. This hot air would go through the tent, it would make you gasp, you know, and you'd be drinking water and that.
Had you received any instruction or advice about acclimatisation and about living in hot weather conditions?
Well, not specific instruction. It came in the form of you must do this. In other words, you were told never to go without a hat, and you were on parade every morning, and you had to drink a cupful of salt water every day.
On the parade?
On the parade. You had to, it was dished out on the parade, and you had to drink it.
Mm.
And eventually you got to quite like it.
The salt water?
Yeah. Mm. But you didn't at first. And also, we had to take a daily dose of Mepocrine, the yellow peril, which was there to protect us from malaria. Mm. So that was what went on in the morning. You went on parade and did this, and then as soon as the sun got up, it was bed for everyone, or just lounge around, you know. Life was terribly boring. And we didn't have any equipment. We had a few 1,500 weight trucks, which we tried to pretend were tanks, and we'd run around on this on the desert, sort of trying to get hull down positions behind rocks and things, and getting shaken to pieces. But that's it, really. We had no real armaments to practice with.
But were you being organised on a regimental basis while you were there? Were you being put into troops and...
Oh, yes, 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 oh, yeah. The regiment was formed there.
How was that done?
I really haven't a clue. Mm. I was just told that I was now in number 3 troops, C squadron, you know.
Mm.
And that was it. And I knew what the troop, the regiment, the troop, the squadron and the regiment formation was and who were the commanders and the officers concerned.
In your troop, 3 troop, which presumably would have been the, you know, your main focus at that time.
Yes.
How many of these regulars did you have, the Carabinier regulars?
None in our tank crew, no.
What about the troop?
In the troop, yes, there were 3. 3 in the troop.
So you were 3 troop C squadron, and you'd got a few trucks for.
Yes.
And this is presumably a form of tactical training, getting you used.
That's right. Yes.
Used to the use of ground. Isn't
yes.
It?
Yes. Yes, but of course, and radio communications as well. Oh. We had, you know, you could disappear into the distance and contact one another by RT.
Did the set perform effectively in those conditions?
They performed well enough. I don't remember any particular problems.
Do you have any idea what sort of range you could cover with a standard set?
That depended an awful lot on the territory that you were in, you know.
But I mean, at Galunchy,
in the desert, Galunchy, yeah, you know, you can be well out of sight and contact one another. But there were other places, of course, where it was extremely difficult.
What time would you start work in the mornings? When do you go on your first parade?
Well, reveille would be sounded. We had all that, you know. The bugle used to come on and sound reveille. And I suppose that was at about 6 o'clock, reveille. Quite frankly, I really don't know how we filled our time in at Galunchy. It was terribly boring. Terribly boring. And we used to spend a lot of time, I mean, the bathing was a problem, you know. There were no sort of showers or bathhouses or anything like that. Toilet facilities were very, very crude. They got the Indians to dig a huge trench and a hole in the deck, and they built these wicker cubicles as toilets. Which just had a pole inside, and you sat on the pole. And every so often somebody would come along and chuck a load of dirt in on top and a bit of disinfectant, and that was it. But they got... they were looked after by the MO, funnily enough. He sort of sought all that and made sure that they didn't become a vector for... or a breeding ground for flies and mosquitoes.
Do you remember if there were any cases of sickness while you were there?
A lot.
A lot.
Oh,
what,
yes.
What were the main illnesses?
Dysentery.
Dysentery.
Yes. I myself was a victim. I had dysentery 3 times during my service out there. I had jaundice once. I had otitis media because I sank in my tank and burst an eardrum, got an infection. And what else did I... Oh, yes, I got caught... Ah, that was at Galunchy. I got caught in a dust storm. It was like a whirlwind affair. You could see them coming across the plain. Dust devils. It was a whirlwind, and they'd take the sand up enormous heights, and... the kite hawks would be circling round and round them, waiting for stuff to fall out that had been sucked up. but if one of those came through the camp, went right through the tent, and a piece of sand or rock hit the side of my eye, and that hospitalised me for a time.
Where was the hospital? Was that in the camp at...
No, that was a field hospital, you know, a very sort of crude affair. tents and that sort of thing. I can't remember what the operating room was like.
Do you know where it was?
No, Poona, I think.
Poona?
Yeah.
How did you get there? Was it a motor ambulance or something of that sort?
Well, you were taken there by the MO had a 1500 weight.
Yeah.
One of the 1500 weights was allocated to him to use as an ambulance or whatever. Mm. So, yes, you'd be taken to hospital in that. And when it was time to come home, you... I suppose you had to find your own way back. Mm. I can't remember how I got back. No, can't remember that.
Were you issued with a distinctive regimental uniform or cap badge or anything of that sort at Gallantry?
Yes, we were issued with our cap badge, the 25th Dragoons cap badge. We were issued with fresh topies, which looked like real topies. You know, they were thick and they were made of lightweight material. Seem to get the impression they were made of some sort of straw with a canvas covering. They were quite smart looking things actually, and they had a what they call a puggri, which was a band around them which had the three regimental colours on in stripes right round the band. They were quite smart headgear and very useful in the circumstances. I mean, your berry was no protection against the sun.
Was there any local town or anywhere you could go for recreation? Or
Poona was the nearest.
Poona was the nearest.
And as I remember it, Poona was quite a way away, about 30 miles.
Was there anything you could do there if you happened to get there?
Well, I spent a leave there once, but with a friend, we went down there. We booked into a hotel, which was well run. It was quite a decent hotel, really. I suppose in the days of the Raj it had been, you know, a sort of commercial hotel. But we spent our time sightseeing and having a look around, you know. There wasn't an awful lot to do.
You mentioned that some of the older soldiers treated the Indians badly. Did you get any sense of the political atmosphere in India when you were in Poona and so on?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. Because it was at that time that they were really bucking against being ruled by the British, you know. And so people like Pandit Nehru and those sort were really stirring things up. So there was the odd incident, you know, bombing incidents and things like that, and riots and that sort of thing. And I remember one situation at Gallantry. The officers there invited some women up to the mess from Poona. I suppose they'd met somebody or other. I don't know really the ins and outs of it, but they came up there for why anybody should want to visit Gallantry, especially a woman. I cannot understand, because there was no facilities there. You know, I mean, you could probably form a band out of one or two instruments, or hire a band, I suppose. But too hot to dance, I would have said. No, I would say they came over for drinks and a chat. But the situation was such that we had to form an escort, and I was on that escort. You jumped in the back of one of these 15 underweights with your rifle, and half a dozen of you, and escorted the ladies back.
Had you done any training in riot drill or other aid to the civil power?
No.
I mean, there was a campaign going on at the time, a Quit India campaign.
Yes.
Do you remember
hearing
about
remember
that?
Yeah. And it was supported and sort of encouraged by the Japs. I have a leaflet in my archives there in the front room, coloured leaflet. Japanese leaflet, which was dropped from the air into India, encouraging an uprising. You know, it shows a British soldier being kicked out of India.
Did you actually see any disorder yourself while you were in the Gallantry in Poona?
Yes.
You did?
Yes. Saw sort of riots and that sort of thing, yeah.
Who was dealing with that?
Not that I took part in, but the police usually. the Indian police, and they were none too gentle either. They went in with long, they called them lathis. They were about 4 foot long sticks. They used them.
When you were formed up as a regiment, do you remember where the officers came from? Were they from the Carabiniers or were they from diverse
sources? Most of them were straight from public school. My troop officer, he owned a pub in Acton. That was his civilian life.
Mm.
And he came in and did his training, I suppose, at Sandhurst, and ended up as my troop commander. I had several troop commanders. I had one who was a nephew of Orkinlick. We used to call him the Ork. He's a jolly nice chap, actually.
What did you look for in an officer at this stage? You were still a fairly young and inexperienced soldier. You were trained and so on, but you hadn't been in action. What did you think you required from an officer?
Well, support, really. In any situation where, say, somebody was being bullied or anything like that, you would expect the officer in charge to be able to sort things out and to say, look, this nonsense has got to stop. I mean, he had the authority, and one thought he should use it. You know.
Were there instances?
Some of them didn't.
Were there instances of bullying going on?
Oh, yes. You used to get all sorts of things going on. You'd get people accusing other people of being homosexual and that sort of thing. And without the slightest proof. I mean, a man might look a bit effeminate, but, you know, how wrong can you be in a lot of cases? And, of course, they were all types thrown together. So you were bound to get some quite pleasant liaisons and some which were not quite so pleasant. There were some people in our regiment that I hated the sight of. And most of those were regular army people, you know, 3rd Carbineers. Some of them were very nice. I remember one chap who was a bugler. he was in our tent, actually. He was a very nice chap, and you could hold a in-depth conversation with him without any nonsense, you know, and got on quite well. Excuse me a moment.
Do you have an idea of how long you were at Gallantry before you moved?
It seemed like forever. I think it must have been about 8 or 9 months, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But were you aware of what was going on in the war at a general level at that stage? Do you have information about the big picture?
Yes, we not detailed, of course, but anything important we got wind of, you know, largely by radio.
Was this over some sort of civilian radio, or was it on your?
Well, on our 19 sets, we could, by putting the headphones in a basin, we could make it into a speaker. We could sometimes get in on BBC broadcast, long wave broadcast.
Where did you go when you left Gallantry?
Life was very busy then.
Mm.
We found our way in various places. I can't remember all the places we went to. We moved east, I recall. To Calcutta Way.
How did you do that? Was that
train?
By train?
Yes.
From Gallantry?
From Gallantry. Well, from Poona, actually.
From Poona?
Yeah. Mm. No rail service at Gallantry. There wasn't even a road at Gallantry. Mm. No, we entrained, the whole regiment entrained at Poona. And as I recall, we were several days on the train.
Did you have tanks by that stage?
No, we had nothing.
Nothing.
We joined our tanks at Calcutta.
Was that in Calcutta itself or outside the city?
No, it'd be outside, in one of the docks. there was great excitement because we heard we were going to get our tanks. And like all these things in the services, it's going to happen, then it's not going to happen, then it happens. You know, you don't never know where you are. But eventually...
Latrinogram system of information.
That's right, yes. Mm. Eventually, we got our tanks. We were a bit disappointed on what we got. You know, we got Stuarts, which they called Honeys. Light tank, a little light tank. Good fun. You go like hell on that.
That's more of a reconnaissance tank, isn't it, than a main battle tank?
More of a reconnaissance tank, yes. Mm. They were used in battle, of course, but we didn't use them in battle, our regiment. We very quickly got rid of the Honeys.
Mm.
And
you were saying it was fun. I mean, what were the driving characteristics of the Honey?
Sorry?
What were the driving characteristics of the Honey?
Driving characteristics?
Yeah.
Well, it was very light to throw around, you know. Mm. I mean, there was no sort of physical effort involved in steering the darn thing or anything else. But it was jolly noisy. It had a radial engine in it.
Mm.
And it was very noisy. But other than that, my main memory of the Honey was what fun it was to drive, you know. Mm. You could throw it around and... it really could go quite fast.
What sort of things did you do with the Honeys? Did you go out and do any tactical training with them?
No. Mm. No, didn't at all. We got rid of them too quickly. They went to another unit.
Yes.
I think... I'm trying to think who the reconnaissance unit was. Who was it? I think we used to do our own reconnaissance.
Mm.
We had... one troop that was supposed to do the reconnaissance. I don't know what happened to the Honeys. Mm. We ended up with Grants and Lees.
Mm.
And I remember we were terribly disappointed because we didn't consider them to be a tank to start with.
Why not?
Well, they didn't look like a tank. We'd been used to British tanks, which were, in my idea, a good engineering product. You know, they'd been well put together. They had they had reasonable armour. They weren't all that fast, some of them, and they had this dreadful gun on them, the 2-pounder. But you could get hull down behind a blade of grass in most of them, especially the Valentine, which I thought was a lovely tank. But this thing, this Lees and the Grants, were like driving a block of flats. You know, you sat up high, it was high, and it was very difficult to get hull down behind anything. And the limit that you had on the 75mm gun, the Travis limit, was a bit of a no-no, especially if you were in tight jungle conditions, because you couldn't swivel the tank round. You know, you'd be... on a narrow track, and you didn't have room for manoeuvre. So, you know, unless the target was in that area, directly in front of you, you couldn't engage it. But eventually we got to like these tanks. Because they had enormous firepower. I mean, they had a 75mm gun, they had a 37mm in the turret, they had 2.300 machine guns in the hull, just on the left of the driver, in ball-mounted things. They were handled by the wireless operator. Upstairs in the turret you had the 37mm gun and another Browning. And you had another Browning which could be clipped onto a frame for anti-aircraft work.
That's four machine guns in one vehicle.
Yeah, enormous firepower. I mean, you get that lot, and we did on occasion during battle use the lot. Mm. The